Morning, everybody. It is an absolutely wonderful day. Thank you for that kind introduction. It's a real pleasure to be speaking here today, but I do need to let you know some news first. There's a general election tomorrow, and that means that we're in Purdah, so please don't mention to anybody that I'm here. It also means that I can't anticipate the future direction of Friday's government, and I can't talk about the UK's exit from the EU. I'm sure you'll understand. I'm the third FSA chairman to be invited to give this lecture, and it's 10 years, I think, since you last heard from the agency on this platform. A lot's changed since then. I'm going to resist giving you chapter and verse and everything we've done since 2007, but I do want to reflect on the FSA as it comes of age. We are now in our 18th year, and the UK will have left the European Union before this department hits 21. This world is fundamentally different already from when the FSA was created, no matter what the future holds. So we have been spending a lot of time trying to understand what that means for good food regulation today and in the future, what it means for us as a regulator, and obviously the implications for you. I'm well aware in this audience that many of you have observed the FSA from its infancy under the guiding hand of John Krebs. In the last 18 years, we've had some formative events. We've had a bit of surgery as we lost some of our remit to other agencies. We've acquired a new sibling in Food Standards Scotland. We've had some unexpected shocks, most dramatically the horse meat scandal of 2013, but look back to 2005 and the Sudan One mass recall. Some in the industry, probably some of you in this room, would say that we've been a rather truculent teenager at times. Many of you have called out the approach the FSA took to break the impasse on tackling levels of Campylobacter in chicken. However, with the most recent stats showing 100,000 fewer cases of Campylobacter reported, there is an alternative view that without pushing industry as hard as the FSA did, we wouldn't have got so far so quickly. In any case, I really hope that we won't have to play blink again on an issue of such critical importance to public health. And on Campylobacter, I think we can all agree that progress has been satisfying. Industry hugely raised its game and deserves plaudits for doing so. And just as importantly, there remains more to do. We need to sustain the reduction in infection rates. We need to tackle the places where contamination levels remain stubbornly high. And just as important, we need to keep the science moving because there's still too much that we don't know about that very clever pathogen. And like any adolescent, we've also tested our boundaries in the last few years. We've got into some of the wider societal issues about the future of food, acquired a campaigning T-shirt, embraced the language of advocacy. The FSA has pioneered using new digital technologies, and I think its use of social media to improve consumer messaging and things like alerts has really made a difference to people, people like me, who need to know what's in their food. It's not just a passing interest. So what have we learned from those formative life events as we turn of age? What do we think is our role and responsibility today? I'd like to talk about three components of that. I want to talk about science, sustainability, and character. And I would approach all three of them through the lens of trust. I've got a favourite proverb which comes from Holland, and it's this: trust arrives on foot and leaves on horseback. In the context of food safety, leaving on horseback is possibly not the best example. But the point is this: years spent building reputation and trust are undermined in the blink of an eye by someone somewhere in the food system getting it wrong, and we are all back at square one when that happens. My most startling FSA statistic sums up how the people feel about food businesses. Only 47% of the public responding to our latest consumer survey, 47%, said that they trusted the people who produce or sold their food. The uncomfortable truth is that your average person has very little knowledge of the journey that their food has taken before it got onto their plates or into their kitchens. And that lack of comprehension breeds unease and distrust. The public worry that food production is becoming so complex that it's impossible to choose food that's good for them without a price premium. They're worried about authenticity, provenance, and honesty. And rightly or wrongly, consumers fear that they're being hoodwinked, that the food they buy isn't authentic and it's not what it says on the label. They have a belief that food businesses only operate through the prism of maximising profit. Now, the people do feel more confident about food safety specifically. 2 in 3 consumers think that someone's got their back. The same proportion trust the FSA. But I'm not complacent about that either. After all, trust arrives on foot and leaves by horseback. But my point is that distrust in other aspects of food can be a really powerful contaminant when it comes to safety and authenticity. And it's also not fair. The fact is that the vast majority of food businesses do the right thing by their consumers. Food and drink from the UK is regarded as some of the safest in the world. We have globally respected food standards. UK businesses are at the forefront of innovation in food. You're investing to keep driving up quality and choice. Well over 1 billion food items are sold every week just in the main 7 UK supermarkets. 1 billion food items. Last year, 175 were recalled. It's a minuscule percentage of food products that require a recall. Food is safe. But perception is also reality. So I would suggest that we've got a shared goal to drive up public trust in food and food businesses. And we do know that we're going to be facing into the wind on this. Between 2012 and 2017, Edelman's Global Trust Barometer registered a 19-point fall in trust across government, business, media, even NGOs. Nearly half of all the people in Edelman's last survey said that facts mattered less to them. But people do still attach relatively high credibility to technical and academic experts, and that gives us a hook on which we can build. E.M. Forster wrote that trust is a luxury in which only the wealthy can indulge. The poor cannot afford it. We can't allow that to be true of food. People should have food they can trust. To trust their food, they've got to trust you. They've got to trust me in the FSA. And industry and regulator, we have to improve our trust in each other. So what are we going to do to tackle this? I'll talk about science first. Actually, science should always be first at the FSA. The FSA is a science and evidence-based body. When I took over as chairman last year, I heard quite a lot of concern that science was less visible in the FSA. In the last 12 months, we've taken steps to reinvigorate science in the department. We've started to modernise surveillance, using inputs beyond sampling the needle in the haystack, but starting to use data from OGD, other government departments and industry. We're critically assessing how we achieve the necessary statistical power in surveillance. We're reviewing our surveillance priorities annually. And the first application of this new approach is the investigation we're making into antimicrobial resistance in commensal and pathogenic bacteria in food, which is part of the bigger contribution we're making on addressing AMR. One of the risks in any institution is that past priorities linger beyond their use-by date. We keep doing stuff because we've always done it, not because it's any longer a top priority or even necessary to do. And this year, we have acted on that risk in relation to science spend. We've identified 3 categories of science in which the FSA invests. There's core business, there's investment, and there's strategic science. And the core business science is where almost all our money has been going. It's the stuff that keeps the wheels turning on current statutory processes, on contractual commitments, and on regulations as they exist today. We believe we can bring the proportion of spend in that area down over time, not least by better use of data. And that will free up funds for investment. investment in science about how we can improve controls, respond to new risks, and evolve the regulatory regime. And a good early example of that will be the decision we've taken recently to investigate the increase in adult onset food-related allergies. And then we also want to spend more on strategic science. And this is about future resilience and finding those breakthrough moments. So, for example, we have a research fellow now at the Quadram Institute who's looking at how we use cutting-edge technology and data to investigate the gut microbiome, and particularly relationships between normal gut bacteria and pathogens, pathogenic virulence, and molecular epidemiology. We've also set up a new high-powered science council to advise and challenge the board and our chief scientific advisor. And that council meets for the first time later this month. We've asked it two initial questions. First of all, we want advice on how we decide the science capacity and capability that the FSA will need for the future. Where do we find it? What kind of skills do we need? How do we access it? And secondly, we're asking the council for best practice advice on how we determine and communicate risk uncertainty. Input on both of those things will help us be better at explaining in plain English two core aspects: what the expert independent risk assessment is, and how we use that risk assessment to make risk management decisions, the decisions that are balancing public health and consumer choice. I think the FSA can do a lot more to help build public trust by sharing our scientific and technical information more effectively. Consumers just don't know who to go to or who to trust to find out more about food. I think that source of independent, non-partisan advice and insight ought to be the FSA. We should be the go-to for the truth about food. We should be providing information, identifying the unknowns, explaining risk concepts as well as the specifics, talking about certainty and uncertainty, treating the consumer like they're a grown-up, giving them confidence to then make their own ethical or value judgments. Back in 2001, John Krebs gave this lecture, and on this platform he talked that the FSA's early strategic ambition was to be trusted as the UK's most reliable source of advice and information about food. We need to recommit to that, and we need to redouble our efforts to achieve it. And alongside that, I hope that our new Science Council and more intelligence from across the industry can help improve our foresight and our readiness for future risks and challenges. The UK has long been regarded as a global leader in food science, and I think the FSA has a role to play in helping sustain that position. So, moving to sustainability. If our ambition is to be an excellent modern regulator, which it is, we need a regulatory regime that makes that real, one that's responsive, agile, sustainable. Business innovation and just purchasing and consumption habits today have totally outstripped the way regulation has always been done. We are running a one-size-fits-all model. It's not proportionate to the risk. It is not sustainable. So there's a pressing need to build a new food regulation system for Northern Ireland, England, and Wales. 16 months ago, the FSA launched an ambition to create and implement that 21st century blueprint. And since then, we've been piloting, trialling, and refining ideas with local authorities, with the profession, businesses large and small, with consumers. Later this summer, we'll be publishing more detail about how the new model will work and the steps we're going to take to introduce it. But at its heart, we want to use proven accreditation schemes, regulated third-party assurance, and businesses' own data to give us greater confidence that food safety and authenticity are top of a food business's mind every day, not just inspection day. Our new approach will segment businesses according to the level of risk they present. There is so much more information in and about food businesses that we could be using to build a more accurate picture of behaviour and compliance. Technology is making that easier all the time. I'm talking about the data that you in food businesses collect every day, from your own audits and checks, and about information from other sources, including other regulators. Earned recognition schemes will be important in this as well, where we're confident that their standards and quality are high enough. And on that note, I am really delighted that the British Hospitality Association is now taking a lead in developing a recognition scheme for the hospitality and catering sector, filling a void that I think has been a risk in that part of the food system. So, with more understanding of how a business manages food safety and authenticity, we can set a more proportionate regulatory regime for that business. Lower risk, consistent performance will mean a lower regulatory burden. And that will mean that the FSA can focus our efforts on filling gaps rather than duplicating what other people are doing. We want to see more choice in how businesses get external assurance, hence the idea to create a new certified regulatory auditor role. We know that local authorities can innovate in how they deliver essential services. We've identified opportunities to strengthen and update the value that environmental health practitioners contribute. For example, developing deeper technical specialisms so that it can add more value in a primary authority relationship. This new regime has to take a proportionate and consistent approach to near misses or occasional mishaps. Harnessed intelligently, these can drive a learning and improvement culture across the vast majority of food businesses that aim to do the right thing. Some people have suggested that this is light touch regulation, and it is not. It is right touch regulation. It's businesses doing more to evidence their compliance, and it's us having a better line of sight into the industry overall, changing risk patterns, upcoming issues. It's us being able to focus on the higher risk, the vulnerable, and those who seem determined, deliberately or willfully, to put the public at risk and to undermine trust. I would like you to think about the Great Wall of China. It's vast, 5,500 miles long, visible from the moon, built to keep out the barbarians. It is so high, it was thought that nobody could get over it. It's so deep that you couldn't punch a hole through it. So, how come in the first 100 years after the wall was completed, the barbarians invaded China 3 times? Because they bribed the gatekeepers. The integrity of the defence fell down at the human level. Business integrity, personal integrity, these are what lie at the heart of a successful food safety system. The pathogens that we're bothered about, they don't even need to make a cash bribe to exploit failures in integrity. So we can do a lot better if we can bolster our process controls with better evidence on the people question. Management and culture is at the heart of public protection. 100 people knowing and doing the right thing on the factory floor is the best defence against one person in their midst doing the wrong thing. People are asking themselves, would I feed that to my kids? Is that person putting my livelihood at risk? Am I going to call it out? My ambition is that our future regulatory regime can use better evidence and certainty about the management and culture in food businesses. Because remember, fewer than half the people we asked said they trusted the people who produced or sold their food. So what about us, the FSA? What characteristics will enable us to succeed with this ambition for reform and for greater public trust? I think our foundations are strong. We're independent from political and special interest influence. We are open and transparent, and we do not operate behind closed doors. We're honest about what we know and what we don't know and what we can do about it, and we put consumers first. I have described to you an ambitious change programme. It is easy and tempting to think of that change being for everybody else to make, and the FSA will just carry on as normal. But we have to change. We have to get match fit to take advantage of the opportunities that lie ahead and to be on the front foot against the risks. So first of all, the FSA has to become more agile. It's not a word you often hear associated with government departments, but there you go, it's the first. We need to find a different voice. In recent years, we've adopted an advocacy style and a bit of a campaigning mission. We've concluded that is not the right approach. It's not for government departments to be campaigning bodies. That's for the charity and the NGO sector. So from now on, we're focusing our communications on building recognition and confidence in the FSA as the go-to source of truth about food, food safety, food authenticity. We're working at plans for FSA Explains, giving the public non-partisan and balanced information. We are ramping up our international contribution, and we have had a warm welcome from our peers across the globe at CODEX, GFSI, and other congresses, not just for being there, but taking the chair on key issues like AMR and third-party accreditation. And I have been really struck, not just by the warmth of that welcome for the UK being back with its UK hat on, but to hear how keen our sister bodies are to learn about what we're doing here, modernising regulation and the wider shifts in the industry. I think we need to replicate that leadership role back at home. It needs to be more in evidence. I have heard loud and clear in the last 12 months that industry wants clarity and ownership from the FSA in setting and defining standards. And that is what we will do. I know what I want people to say about us. I'd like us to be regarded here in the UK and abroad as an excellent, modern, accountable regulator. I want us to be trusted, and I want to be part of a UK food system that's trusted. We're going to make most progress towards those goals if we in the FSA can change our relationship with the food industry. Move away from parent-child into a grown-up relationship based on mutual understanding and trust. There are three motivations behind the effort that I'm making to build better relationships with the industry. First, there's always half an eye on the next food crisis, and we all know that cold calling in the heat of the moment isn't ideal for getting on top of a crisis, so I'd rather we got to know each other better in peacetime. Second, better relationships will just give us a better, more informed understanding of your business motivations, the economic environment, risk and opportunity, so we can deliver better targeted regulation. And thirdly, good relationships mean that we can share insights and intelligence and work together on agreeing what the priority threats and risks are coming over the horizon. Now, I have been challenged on whether the FSA can temper our regulatory zeal when, through these reforms, we're going to know more often about what's happening in food businesses. It is a very fair challenge. And we ourselves have to be measured and proportionate in how we respond to that increased knowledge. And you need to see that we are more measured and proportionate. I have learned in the last year that this sector has got really long memories when it comes to relationships with the FSA. I have got the message that there is a trust hurdle to overcome. Time and again, I hear that the FSA's commitment to openness and transparency is the big obstacle to sharing more business or industry data with us. Whether that's intelligence about food crime shared with the National Food Crime Unit, or whether it's sharing compliance data. I appreciate that you are anxious that anything we hold will automatically end up in the public domain. I appreciate that media headlines about food scares cause waves with customers and shareholders. I can see that's why you don't yet fully trust us with your data. But with mutual understanding, I feel sure that we can find some pragmatic and practical ways to address that without compromising our core principles. I also occasionally hear that cross-industry cooperation on food safety would fall foul of the CMA. And I absolutely refuse to accept that. We need to put it behind us. It's an excuse. And if necessary, we need to work with the CMA to make it clear that cooperation on food safety is not a competition issue. But I really don't dismiss your concerns. If I worked in a food business, they'd probably be my concerns too. I am hoping that because, and I genuinely believe this, we want the same goals. We want safe food. We want authentic food. We want the public to have trust and confidence in protection. We want a successful UK food industry. If I'm right that those are shared goals, then I am sure we can work through those obstacles and find a solution to the trust transparency conundrum. And I think we'd better do it, because either way, the public are going to demand new levels of transparency. That's happening across every sector. It's going to happen in relation to food. They're going to demand information about how food is produced, how we can guarantee its safety. It's the way the world is going. So I'd much prefer us to work together to build public trust and respond to that demand. More information offered openly with good context will deliver better public understanding. It will mean that the many admirable and hard-working food businesses across this country will be recognised as responsible food businesses, responsible for producing food that's safe, responsible for producing food that's what it says it is, responsible for explaining to the consumer why they can be confident about that. So, a grown-up relationship as we come of age, a grown-up relationship between the food industry, science, and the FSA, based on trust and mutual understanding. That's the commitment that I'm making on behalf of the FSA, and I hope the food industry is willing to meet us halfway. Thank you.